Enjoy the convenience of 7 days a week banking and extended hours with Cube from First Arkansas Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Tell them to go shove it. He said, it's the LA Raiders. I said, hell yeah.
The year before, he'd been number one overall pick of Tampa Bay, and he had refused to go there, and there was no thought that anybody had a year later that he was going to change his mind. And so nobody was talking about taking him.
Then he became available in the draft. Al Davis, being Al Davis, picks him up in the seventh round. I remember that. I was like, why you pick him up still in the seventh round? Why was he available to the seventh round?
Al Davis lived for such moves. He loved to outsmart everybody.
I know that Al Davis was always fascinated with great size and great speed, tangible numbers, and Bo had that in spades.
Whatever comes after baseball season is a hobby for Bo Jackson. Just like fishing and hunting, I may pick up another hobby after baseball season.
He was playing football as a hobby. That's pretty amazing right there. He was playing football as an off-season hobby.
That was the beginning of him seeming like a different kind of athlete, in the sense that it was very clear he did not think about pro sports the way his peers did, and that was probably a manifestation of his natural ability.
And then all I remember is he had this contract where he could play baseball until baseball season ended, and then he could come play football. I'm like, yo, Bo is winning. Eating.
It was mind-boggling that a player wouldn't need training camp, could walk off of a baseball field, stretch a little bit, make the transition a little bit, and bang.
It happened so fast, you know. He goes to the Raiders, doesn't play the first game, and then a month later, he's arguably the best running back in the game, and that was just, it was crazy.
He shows up in Los Angeles to play with Marcus Allen, who happens to be, just one of the 10 greatest running backs, all-around running backs, probably in the history of the game. And pretty much, you know, when Bo decides he wants to give it a full-time shot with the Raiders, it's like, we don't need Marcus so much.
We'd never seen anything like it before. It was just like, is this guy going to be a Hall of Famer in two sports?
So 20 years until...
Hey, did you miss Clinton and Friends?
Dodger Drew in New Mexico. You're on with Clinton Yates and David Dennis Jr.
How you doing, gentlemen? If I can't glean you for a minute, I'm lucky enough to be able, in my work, to listen to the whole lineup, you know, unsportsmanlike, you guys, eyes and whatnot. Clinton, you guys put on the best product. I'm glad you're getting some recognition on the big show. I love your show.
Clinton and Friends, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. Amber and Ian.
I have had this discussion with many a parent. Anybody who tells me that on a day in, day out basis, you don't have a favorite child, you're full of crap. Tell me right now, who's your favorite kid today?
My favorite kid today? I don't know if I have one today.
That's a blatant lie. I'm looking right at you.
Amber and Ian. Weeknights at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. This is Freddie and Harry.
Big Joiner, if those numbers come up in your favor and you hit the Powerball lottery tonight, what would you do with the money?
This woman of 40 years, my baby, my queen, them 40 years is over, you heard me? I'm going to give her her half, and I'm going to be back to Big Joiner, the soul burner, house rocker, water walker, and soul talker, baby.
Check out more from Freddie and Harry weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
something out of Homer. There was this energy and this aura emanating from him that no one else could match.
Every single run, there was this potential for something unbelievable.
I had never seen anything like that, and have yet to see anything like that.
All these things that people still remember so vividly were all happening in a very short space of time.
Basically, from 85, 86 until the late 80s, early 90s, he was sort of the shooting star. He came and went so quickly.
It was all about this talent that he had that made you believe that he could do anything.
There was something incredible going on here, and it was something that I don't think we'd ever seen. I don't think we'd ever seen it before in sports.
From the Kingdom in Seattle, Washington, it'll be a noisy sellout crowd for tonight's meeting of the Seattle Seahawks and the Los Angeles Raiders.
The game people remember about him most was the Monday night game against the Seahawks.
Hear a thing. I can only hear wind going by the holes in my helmet. I can't hear the people cheering. It just goes silent, and I just hear wind blowing by. And I ran, and I ran, and I ran. And I'm still running full speed. Now I'm like, there's a wall. I need to stop. And I look to the left, and this door is open. I don't know where that door went to, but instead of trying to stop quick and pull a hamstring, I said, well, I'll coast, and went on in the tunnel and hit the back wall in the tunnel.
He's gone. There go the Raiders into flying. What a scene.
Come on back, guys.
Oh, he was
and
flying.
When I turn around to come out of the tunnel, some of my teammates are running down the tunnel to get me. They were, bring your ass back here. You not finished with them. Come on. But we're going to do about three more of those. Come on back.
91 yards up one sideline. 221 yards later, and
I think in that same game, you know, just to, you know, like widen everybody's eyes further, that was the game in which he ran over Brian Bosworth at the goal line.
Bosworth.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
The Boz, freshly quacked.
Brian Bosworth had marketed himself leading up to that game as what he was going to do to Bo Jackson.
Going into the game, Brian Bosworth was almost trying to set up this binary relationship between him and Bo Jackson, and that he was going to take Bo Jackson out.
Brian Bosworth came out of college with this reputation that he was this nasty, rough, tough guy.
Wow, he was talking trash to Bo Jackson, saying he was going to stop him and contain him.
And you know, sooner or later, that these two are going to end up squaring off somewhere along the line in this game.
Jackson just sort of destroys him.
Watch the Boz. The shoulders are square, the back tip. He drives into it and gets driven back into the end zone himself easily.
To see him plow over this guy, it was like almost like watching an old Western or something, you know? It was like the good cowboy just kind of mauled the bad cowboy in some ways.
People wanted to see that happen with Brian Bosworth. It was almost metaphorical. It was good versus evil, and good trampled him.
That, at that moment, was the end of Brian Bosworth, and it was the, I don't want to say the beginning, but it was the validation of the greatness of Bo Jackson.
The whole country saw that, and the whole country marveled at that.
And that somehow then totally switched the way people perceive Jackson. I think a lot of the people who didn't like the idea of him playing two sports suddenly were excited about it because it did seem merit-based.
He was the biggest, strongest guy in Major League Baseball, and he was the fastest guy at the same time. He was one of the biggest, most powerful, bruising running backs in the NFL. He's also the guy who ran the fastest 40 ever recorded at the combine, 4.12. It didn't make any sense.
We've seen two sports stars, but no one who was as good at both as Bo Jackson was for a short period of time.
There were some games where he struck out four times in a game, but the way he swung the bat, even though he missed, everyone else, you're like, come on, hit the ball. But there was something about the way, even when he missed the ball.
Everything that he did was like a must-see moment. And to do it at such a high level in both major sports against major competition.
Fly in the shallow left center that could drop in, and no!
You're like, no way, that can't be real. You know, you thought the TV was a video game and kind of going back and forth between reality.
God just reached down and touches a guy like that and says, you're going to be great. You're going to make great athletes look average.
Ladies and gentlemen, former President Ronald Reagan, and how good it is to have you here in the ballpark.
I've been out of work for 6 months, and maybe there's a future here.
Leading off, the American League's top vote-getter of 1989, Bo Jackson.
At the All-Star game, we were stacked to the gills. Kirby Puckett, Don Mattingly, Wade Boggs, you name it, we had it. We get to the ballpark, and I look at the lineup, and he got me leading off. I'm like, I've never led off a day of my life.
And here comes Bo.
He was facing Rick Rushel, who was a sinker ball pitcher for the Giants. And I remember saying this to all those guys down the boat, this is a good matchup for Bo. A low sinker ball pitcher and Bo being a low ball hitter, it was a perfect storm.
Bo knew that this was a moment where he could sort of elevate that myth.
I got up to the plate, and he threw the same ball twice. And I said, the first one just did this and dropped off the table. And I said, he threw the same pitch, and I golf swung.
Now, that's a pretty interesting hobby he has. When baseball ends, he winds up playing football. I don't know if there's ever been anyone who...
Hey. He's remarkable, and look at that one. Bo Jackson says hello.
It's kind of interesting because there was a conversation going on in the booth between the great Vin Scully and former President Reagan, and they were having a conversation, and then Bo hit the ball off Rick Rushel, and you could hear the president just go say, oh. And then Vin Scully has a tremendous call that he just says, and Bo Jackson says hello. And you could say that was sort of his hello to everybody around the country, that here I am, I'm on the big stage, and I just did the most amazing thing that you're going to see in this game. I think if you see the reaction of the other players, they were all-star players, the greatest players in baseball, and they were all awed by this one player named Bo Jackson.
And then I guess at some point during the game, during one of the commercial breaks, they roll out the Nike campaign.
He hit a home run in the All-Star game. And then you go to commercial, and it's like, Bo knows.
Bo knows football. Bo knows baseball. Bo knows basketball, too.
Nike was trying to venture out on this new path of cross-training, somebody that trains in multiple sports. When I took over the cross-trainer line, the sales margin increased by 1,000%.
You could try forever to have everything converge as well as they did with the Bo Knows campaign, with Bo hitting the home run, with the ad being so successful. You could try, and you'd probably be lucky if you hit it one time out of 100.
That time, Nike was actually number two behind Reebok. That changed after the Bow Nose commercial.
I don't think anybody anticipated it was going to explode in the way that it did.
The trick to any good advertising is what makes your product different. So what made Bo different from any athlete? It was an obvious layup. He played two sports. Done. And especially for a multi-purpose sports shoe. I mean, it was 1 + 1 = 3 because it turned out so well.
Jim Reswald came up with the campaign and really conveyed the notion of how great Bo was and, you know, secondarily, how the cross-training shoe kind of reflected what Bo epitomized as a multi-sport athlete.
What's more interesting, an athlete or a pair of shoes?
The fun part about working on a shoe for Bo Jackson was that sometimes when you design athletic shoes, they're like caricatures of real shoes. And here comes Bo Jackson. He was larger than life and faster than everybody else and stronger. Bo just seemed like a cartoon character to me. The shoe looks more muscular. There were muscles designed into some of the molded parts. And so that's how I started to design his shoe. And I think that changed the way we talked about shoes for quite a while.
The Bo Nose commercial was good for both Bo and for Nike, but Bo did most of the heavy lifting just because he was so good.
Bo was the icing on the cake that made Nike part of popular culture, bigger than sports.
This was really the dawn of the sophisticated age of branding and marketing with athletes.
Yo, Mike, what makes you the best player in the universe? Is it the vicious dunks?
No, Mars.
Is it the haircut?
No, Mars.
The first one to me, I thought, was the Michael Jordan Spike Lee ads. You choose an athlete and you decide that we're going to kind of build, you know, our shoe franchise around this guy.
Is it the short socks?
No, Mars.
Money's got to be the shoes.
The real difference maker was that then Jordan became indisputably the best basketball player of his generation. So there was this sort of idea that if Nike is putting this person forward, it has merit. So when Nike made the decision to say, Bo Jackson is now the center of our campaign, and the angle of this campaign is that he is the world's greatest athlete who can do anything, I think people were like, well, it's probably true.
Now, I couldn't get the Bo Nose shoes. I couldn't afford that. But you could be in Pop Warner like I was a running back, and I could walk to a practice field, and if you had on a Bo Nose T-shirt, they thought you were a better player. They just were like, oh, for real? You're like, where'd you get that from, you know?
There's counterfeit T-shirts on Venice Beach saying, Bo Nose your mother, Bo Nose your girlfriend.
I mean, you heard rappers, Bo Nose this and Bo Nose that.
I mean, he was literally a superhero in a cartoon.
Bo Nose bad guys, and that Garganus needs to be taught a lesson.
The New Yorker wrote a parody of the Bo Nose thing, you know? So it's like, it was in high culture and it was in low culture. It was all over the place.
And everyone remembers that about Bo Jackson, that he was the greatest Tecmo Bowl player of all time.
Ready? Put.
If you want to talk about the legend of Bo Jackson, nothing does it like the first Tecmo Bowl.
There's no way to say it except that he was unstoppable. You could not stop him. It was unfair to play with the Raiders because the thing with Tecmo Bowl was you sort of ran in patterns, so you'd run up and down the field to avoid the defenders. And with Bo, you could just break through the line and then just kind of go up and down and up and down until you reach the end zone.
He's faster than everybody else. He's stronger than everybody else. But he only had one play because it would have been unfair to give him two.
I don't know if the Japanese just put him on an even higher level than we did because it was all, I think it was all Japanese designers. People remember he was this unstoppable running back in this video game. He must have been that unstoppable in real life. And the myth just grows even more.
I'm not 25 anymore.
The Rich Eisen Show.
I love a journeyman quarterback. They always got a nice tan. Like Steve DeBerg. Steve DeBerg. He was the Magnum P.I. He was the Magnum P.I. of the NFL. He played like 38 seasons.
Yeah, he was pristine.
But the thing was, for 38 whatever seasons, probably like 20 seasons, he was always ready to go.
Right. The Rich Eisen Show. Weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, and on Disney Plus. Evan, Canty, and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
Rocky IV is amazing. The scene where he's in the car driving after Apollo Creed dies, and he's so upset, obviously. Oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I need to put a spoiler alert on that.
I've never seen it.
2025.
I never saw it.
Michael B. Jordan did 3 movies as his son living after the dad died.
Guess I don't need to watch it now.
The movie's 40 years old, Smoltz.
For some of us, it's brand new.
Unsportsmanlike. Weekday morning starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2. Evan, Canty, and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
I get Buffalo Bills defense not that good. I get the Buffalo Bills wide receivers are not the Cincinnati Bengals. But if Josh Allen is the best player that's active in the sport on offense, the kryptonite is out for the season and won't be in the playoffs in Mahomes? The Buffalo Bills are the only championship or bust team in the NFL this year.
Unsportsmanlike. Weekday morning starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2.
Was a multimedia superstar before there was such a thing as multimedia, it seems like.
It was like traveling with one of the Beatles. It really was. Having to go in through the back of hotels, out to grab a bite to eat or whatever.
We're sitting in first class, we're flying back, and the pilots come out and ask Bo for an autograph, and I'm sitting there, I'm beginning an immediate sweat. I'm like, okay, who's flying the plane, sir?
And it couldn't happen to a more humble superstar. That's the other thing that people don't realize, is how humble Bo Jackson was as a superstar.
His persona didn't take on what the Bo Knows campaign was. He kept his own personality and his own character separate from that campaign, which must have been tough, because imagine the ego stroke if somebody says, you know everything, and you're like, yeah, I kind of do.
You know, he's a quiet guy, and he was more quiet then. And he was especially quiet around the press.
Do you have any new hobbies?
Excuse me?
Do you have any new hobbies?
Yeah, I'm trying to have as short a press conference as I can.
I think he was a little reticent at first because he had the little slight stuttering problem.
It's on KABZ Little Rock.
Like anything else, he worked to get over that.
In the American lexicon, we celebrate strong silent types. The Bo Jackson, understated, cool, just... easy dismissal of his own feats is what really gets to people. I mean, he's so good and he doesn't even care. That's what we really like.
Orsolak licks that one to left center field. Ball on the charge. Ball is there.
He's running back in Baltimore at the old stadium there, and he reaches up and catches a ball over his shoulder.
and he's about 3 or 4 feet from the fence. And he jumps up on the wall, takes about 3 or 4 steps, and then jumps off and lands on his feet. And I'm saying, wait a second.
Get up that wall, Spider-Man!
This game's been played over 100 years. I have never seen anybody do that.
I remember thinking, like, is that a big deal? Because it wasn't, not because I'd ever seen anything like that, but it didn't look like a big deal to him.
Again, this is not a human being. This is somebody that it was just thrown out here from outer space to be able to put on a royal uniform.
It seemed like every day for a few years, sports pages were filled with what amounted to the exploits of Bo.
Bo Jackson came along at a time when the sports world was changing, when cable television really first started, ESPN first started. And so rather than just hearing about this guy named Bo Jackson, we were seeing him every single day.
And he never left the stage. Because he played different sports, he was sort of the year-round media celebrity.
Bo Jackson was ideally suited for the age of the highlight. And they were coming at us left and right, football season and baseball season.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Yeah, there's the fastball way up and out of there, and there goes the bat.
You know, you don't see too many people break a baseball bat over their leg and keep walking. You think to yourself, A, I could never break a baseball bat over my leg. B, if somehow I ever managed to, I would have to be hospitalized.
But then, of course, you know, me being an idiot, I go, let me try that. I'm like, oh, and the next thing you know, I got a big, gigantic bruise on my leg.
The breaking the bats situation actually seemed to be a detriment at the time it was happening. It was an amazing thing to see, but of course, it was always following the fact that he had just struck out. And he led the league in strikeouts 1 year. That was his biggest detriment as a baseball player.
He was a home run hitter. He could steal bases, but his batting average was, what, 260, 270 range.
But when you looked at Bo Jackson compete, there was something obvious about his greatness. I think that was the key. It wasn't like you had to make an argument. It was just so clear.
Toward the gap in left center field, Bo Jackson makes a great catch.
He'd go out on the field and do what he did, and then everybody would just be, like...
When Bo went to make a catch, he flew through the air like Superman. I mean, he just literally flew.
Players that were on their way to the Hall of Fame were in awe of him.
He embodied such athleticism, such strength, such speed.
How does a guy that big move that fast, and how is he able to make other guys that are smaller than him miss him and then run over guys who are bigger than him?
Well, he had natural power. He didn't work out in a weight room and take supplements and all that kind of stuff. He was naturally built that way.
I used to give him grief because I go into his house. He had this elaborate, weight room. And I go, look, but I said, oh, there's not even a drop of sweat on this thing. I know you don't do this. He goes, it's all for show because people think I'm lifting. But Bo never really lifted anything.
He would just sort of, go out with his crossbow and shoot a deer and throw it over his shoulder like that was the workout or whatever. Like he would run up a mountain or whatever the case would be, If Bo would come around a decade later, people would not have appreciated his heroics the same way because there would have been an assumption that he was on steroids.
If there was a new Bo Jackson, that would be a suspicion that somebody who had that speed at that size must somehow be cheating.
I've known Bo over the years, and I can tell when you see a steroid guy, you can tell. This was not a steroid guy. This was a guy that was given a God-given body that, any of us would die for.
God bless me with the speed that I can run like a spook deer. He blessed me with great hand-eye coordination. He blessed me with the arm like a high-powered rifle. And with all those tangibles, you gotta be successful in something. You gotta be successful in something that you do. And my niche fell on the baseball and football field.
Steroids have taken away our ability to really marvel at incredible feats. So we're lucky that we got Bo Jackson when we did, because if he had done the things that he did just a little bit later, we would have had to have been skeptical.
We're in Seattle. Score was tied. Harold Reynolds on first base.
Then it's the bottom of the ninth, winning run.
I'm playing left field, but I think Tino Martinez was at bat. And Seattle had a hit and run on.
A ball was hit to the top of the wall.
I'm literally stepping out of my seat, proceeding to go into the locker room, thinking, okay, the game's over. I don't want to hear the fans going crazy. They want a walk-off hit.
And Harold is getting ready to round third base.
Then all of a sudden, I just gave a little courtesy look, and I see Bo at the wall.
And I caught the ball and turned and fired a pellet.
From the wall, which is 300 and some odd feet away.
Toward the corner, he's going to get to Bo Jackson to try to stop Reynolds from scoring. He can't do it. Yes, he can! I don't believe it! He made an absolutely perfect throw!
Ball never touched the ground. Bob Boone, who was the catcher, said he was walking off the field, and he said, oh, my gosh, the ball's coming. And Boone stepped back, caught the ball, and tagged Harold out.
And Harold Reynolds can fly. It's not like he's thrown at me or you know, Steve Balboni was on our team, guys that couldn't run real well. Harold Reynolds can fly.
And Harold's sitting there on the ground. Who cut that ball? Who cut that ball? I said, he threw it from the track. He's still standing on the track. And Harold grabs dirt and throws it down. And he said, he don't supposed to be able to do that. He don't supposed to be able to. And he was ticked. And we went on and won that game because it went 11 innings.
I went to the clubhouse, and there was Harold Reynolds sitting in front of a videotape machine watching that play over and over and over again. He is shaking his head saying, I don't know how he did that.
The next day, there was only one headline, big, bold headline across. It said, The Throw.
From the moment Bo would join a team, like, you know, the pastime on that team would be watching Bo.
There are a few players in each generation that players get up off the bench to watch during a game.
Put it this way, you never went to the bathroom when he was coming up. You know, I always, somebody's coming up and you got to go to the bathroom real quick. You got to leave the dugout and go back up in the locker room or something, or right the urinal right behind the dugout. When Bo Jackson was coming up, no. I would wait for somebody else to come up before I'd have to go to the bathroom.
One play that I remember seeing, he's running a sweep to the left, and then he reverses his field, and he comes all the way back around to the right. He has to hurdle a guy. I think he might be hurdling Jay Schrader, who's trying to block for him. And he's running up the sidelines, and this guy for the Bengals caught him from behind. And at the time, it was sort of like that guy was going to become famous for having caught him. Now, I can't even remember what the dude's name is now. I can remember, picture it in my mind. But that was sort of the story, that the fact that he ran a guy down from behind made him a potential sort of athletic genius, you know, because it was just perceived that nobody was ever going to catch him or outrun him.
I used to just feast off of Cincinnati. And it was a playoff game. I wasn't 100% when I got in that game, but I wanted to play. I remember I went around the sideline, and I could have easily stepped out of bounds, but I didn't. And that's just the nature of the beast.
And he was tackled by my teammate Kevin Walker right in front of me. And the tackle was one of those tackles where a guy dove on the back and grabbed him down from behind.
I was at the game. It was just a normal tackle. It wasn't a bone-crushing tackle or anything like that.
I used to go to all the football games at the Coliseum. I've seen many of the games there where guys got hit and it looked like they were knocked out completely. But didn't look like he got crushed.
He slid down and grabbed my legs. And when he grabbed, I pulled my left leg free. And running as fast as I was, he clamped down on my right leg and was able to hold onto my right leg and stop me in my tracks. I was running with such force, my momentum kept going forward.
If he'd have been a less powerful athlete, he probably wouldn't have had that kind of cheering force to his hip joint, and he would have gone down in a tackle and he would have been fine. But he had such powerful legs, and that's what really got him.
I dislocated the hip out of the backside of the pelvic socket. And as soon as it dislocated, I knew it. And when I hit the ground, I rolled. And when I did that, I popped it back in the socket while I'm rolling. And it popped back in the socket. And I stood up and I went to take my first step. And it felt like somebody jabbed an ice pick up in my pelvic socket. The pain on a scale of 1 to 10, it was about a 25.
When he first got it, nobody knew he was hurt bad because he just kind of got up and kind of limped off the field a little bit.
I got to the sideline and I looked up in the stands because I always found my wife up in the stands because I knew that she was worried still. And I just waved at her and told her, I just gave her a thumbs up like I'm all right. But deep down inside, I'm like, I know this isn't all right.
They showed him sitting down. I knew something was wrong somewhere. Yeah, I didn't know how bad it was, but yeah, something was wrong.
And I remember the doctor coming up to me and he says, yeah. I said, how's Bo? Is he all right? He says, yeah. For some reason, he thinks his hip came out of socket and went back in. That's impossible. Well, that's what happened.
As the afternoon progressed, he's getting a ride back to his car and he's going back to the hotel they stayed at, and he wasn't moving at all. There was something odd about that. He didn't have that invincibility look anymore for some reason.
I remember the news came out that he had a hip pointer, which, you know, is a bruise to the side of the hip over the top of the pelvic bone there, which is a common injury, which is a contusion, basically, where you got bruised.
Bruised hip, hip pointer, okay, dislocated hip. All right, you could return from any of those things and not really understanding why, you know, the days were past, the months that he didn't return.
Of course, he had tried to negate the problem for several weeks and didn't say much about it. Tough guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that I think part of his persona is, even if his, you know, if his ribs are broken or his hip's out of joint, that he wasn't going to let anybody know, and he would still somehow, I think that's what made him great, he could trick himself into believing he's fine.
And the season was over with. Dr. Joyce, who was the team physician for the Kansas City Royals, was doing a preseason physical on him, and Bo told Dr. Joyce that he was having pain in his hip, and he was limping.
The blood vessel of your femur bone keeps the cartilage alive around that femur bone, and I severed that blood vessel when I dislocated my hip, so I was bleeding inside of that area. And when I saw the x-rays, I had to literally sit down because I got sick to my stomach and got lightheaded at the same time. I knew at that point that my football career was over. And I knew then that I had to have a hip replacement.
It was kind of heartbreaking because you'd grown up now with this whole Bo Knows campaign and this whole idea of him and who he was. And then it was just this freak thing where he's running down the sideline and didn't look that bad at first. And then to find out the extent of it.
It wasn't an extension of him trying to play two sports that made that happen. It wasn't like he was, you know, using himself up all summer and then he wasn't ready to play football or he wasn't in shape. That wasn't the case. It was sort of just kind of a freak injury.
The Royals were full of hope, of course, at the time that he would be able to recover from that and go on and play. But as time went by and it became more and more obvious that he wasn't going to be the Bo Jackson of old, they just made the very difficult decision to let him go.
The tears that I have and the sadness that I have is not because the Royals let me go. The tears are because I'm leaving so many good friends.
I remember, when he finally left the Royals the final day, and he was pure class all the way to the end. I mean, he just thanked everybody for everything and went on his way with his head high.
And I remember the day he got released, he walked out of that locker room on crutches and said to me, I will be back.
Best
Kevin, Canty, and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
I think if you're the Miami Dolphins, you cut ties with him. He's not your future at the quarterback position, and quite frankly, you can't move your team forward with him being out there. You understand you're on the hook for his salary next year? Pay it. It's okay. The last thing you want to do is be tied to him beyond next year. Russell Wilson, Denver Broncos style. Get rid of him. Be done with it.
Unsportsmanlike. Weekday morning starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2. This is Freddie and Harry.
That's why I call him a king mixer. All of a sudden, man, you know, hope you guys can deal with the pressure and all this stuff. I wasn't trying to be trolling. I wasn't being backhand complimentary. You exactly were doing that because you know if our Knicks get to the NBA Finals, unless they do it, they exclude the Atlanta Hawks, you might want to take June off, Harry Douglas. It's going to be hell for you.
Check out more from Freddie and Harry weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. This is Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
That's one of the things that's the beauty of the NFL is that, hey, there's no manual that says I can't study what other people have done in the past
right.
that allowed them to have success. Do you go get multiple tight ends? Do you make sure that your quarterback is protected at all costs? Because if you can't win in the trenches, you're not going to win successfully moving forward.
Check out more from Freddie and Harry weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Yesterday that it would happen. We now know that it will happen sometime this summer. That's when Bo Jackson will have his left hip replaced, even though it probably means the end of his athletic career.
We actually lectured to him hour after hour about what it meant to have an artificial hip and how it was done, and we reviewed all the different types of hips with him. Of course, he was advised that he shouldn't play professional sports again. But I remember when he woke up in the recovery room, the first thing he told me, he said, my pain's gone. I'm going to spring training.
I rehab every day, 5 days a week. It was rough rehab, but I can tell you this. It got me in the best shape of my life.
You know, I went to kind of meet with him when he was rehabbing, and he was sitting shooting a bow and arrow with his feet. It was amazing. And he was bullseye after bullseye after bullseye.
I watched him rehab, and the stuff they had him doing was just brutal. I mean, it was very, very hard rehab. He did it every day. He just said, I'm going to play again.
Bo beat the odds and a hip condition that could have put him into a rocking chair. Tonight, he returned to the show for the White Sox.
Years before my comeback, my mother was diagnosed with colon cancer. And before she passed away, she asked me if I was going to try to go back and play baseball. I said, if I rehab well enough to play baseball, I will. And if I do, the first hit I get will be for you.
Bo Jackson, first at bat since October 5th, 1991. That ball hit deep to right field. Turner goes back. Yeah. Homer to right field, and what a moment this is for that.
as I'm coming around third base and I'm looking over home plate in the stands behind home plate, you didn't see anything but everybody jumping up, clapping and cheering and hugging. And all my teammates come up and gave me high five and this and that.
The work and the effort that that man has put into coming back, absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
And the gentleman that caught that ball, he gave it back to me because I promised my mother that I would, that first hit would be for her. So about a week or two later, I had that ball encased in a solid piece of acrylic, and it's bolted to her dresser in her bedroom at home. So.
To see him go back out onto the field was both triumphant that somebody could perform even at the level he was able to do with an artificial hip, but it was also sad because it was, he became a what if story. It's like when you saw him, he was a what if. It's like, look what he can do still on an artificial hip, but what if?
When Bo came to the White Sox, everyone knew that he was going to be a diminished version. If I'm not mistaken, he was the first player ever to play a major American professional sport with an artificial hip. And there was a lot of curiosity. And my recollection of it was that he was a shell of what he had been. Every once in a while, you would see a little flash, a glimmer. You would see the power. You would see even the speed. But he couldn't do it consistently. He was a shell of what he had been before.
No more Nike, no more baseball, no more games. That is the decision by Bo Jackson.
I woke up yesterday morning and I called down to my office and I talked to my business manager and I said, well, I think I'm going to retire this afternoon. Time on my hands, or when I just want to get away from being Bo Jackson, this is my safe haven. I come down here and I make arrows. I make arrows. Instead of doing the bar and the club scene, I do the man cave scene. Sometimes I'll sit up with my wife and during football season, Monday night, she wants to watch the football game. And I'll sit there for about 15, 20 minutes. And I get bored. And I'll ask her, you mind if I go to the man cave? Mind if I go to my man cave? I say, I'm going to my man cave. But I don't want to watch football no more. So I come down here, and I'm in heaven.
It may seem like a ridiculous comparison, but Bo Jackson is almost like the Beatles of great sports stars, because you never got to see him fade. Rather than seeing any sort of natural decline, it was just taken from him, and in some ways taken from us. So all you could do was imagine how good he would have been if it had continued.
You want to see Charlie? This is Charlie. Got him in North Platte, Nebraska. So, and I think this was the last elk I took. I harvested it with my archery. So my trophies, when you say you got a trophy room, my trophy room is my deer heads and my elk heads and my buffalo and my gator skins and all of that. I don't hunt just to kill. All of the meat from these animals, me and my friends have consumed it, or I've donated it to needy families. So nothing goes to waste. That's what I call my trophy room. That's what I call my trophy room.
I don't think that there have been many athletes whose assumed potential continues to be as limitless as Bo Jackson.
When you're elk hunting, you got to take a long shot. And you can take shots out to 70, 80 yards. So I can get back in my neighbor's yard, across the street in his trees, and shoot and hit that target. See if I can put one in the boiler room.
He was just getting started. He was becoming a really good baseball player.
I really believe that he could have been a 500 home run guy.
He could have made it Hall of Fame easily just by playing another year or two.
He could have ended up being the best power hitter of his generation.
God only knows what he would have been able to accomplish as a football running back.
I mean, his yards per carry average was climbing, and he could have ended up being the best running back of all time.
He was a phenomenon, but that phenomenon was so brief that he wasn't really able to put anything lasting together. So if you're not old enough to have seen it, then there's no real reason to come across it anymore. He doesn't hold any records. He didn't win any titles. He didn't even really win that many individual awards because he shared time between the two sports. So what you really are left with are just a few fleeting images.
It's weird. You think back on him like climbing that outfield wall or him breaking the bat over his head. It almost seems like it didn't actually happen, like it was something we just dreamed.
In retrospect, Bo Jackson almost seems like a mild counterculture figure because he seemed to have an adversarial relationship with the way sports previously existed. It makes him seem like an anti-authority figure, but he was never problematic. He was never getting DUIs, or he was never beating up women or anything like that. He was, the authority he was against was this idea that you couldn't be great at everything.
People always ask me, would I ever go back and change anything in my past? And the answer is no. No. I enjoyed what I did. I danced to the beat of my drums, not nobody else's.
You wrote your book that you wanted to say on your headstone, here lies a ball player.
Here lies a ball player, that's all. Here lies a ball player. That gave just as much as he received. Period. That's all it should say. That's all it should say.